we'll start the Q&A session now. And just a reminder to the folks that are on the phone, if you have any questions, please, you know, we'll give you a chance to ask questions during the Q&A. So questions from the floor. Mike. Yes, please use the microphone. And if you're not near one, Eric will bring one to you.
Yeah, I'd like to ask President Dudley, when you spoke on October 1st, you mentioned the possibility that additional Fed stimulus may be likely for the economy or maybe necessary. You didn't talk about it today. Could you give me your thoughts on where we stand with this issue, whether or not the Fed is going to need to do more to support the economy?
I feel very comfortable with what I said on October 1st. So that still stands. I think it's still apropos. I said in that speech that I thought that the unemployment rate was unacceptably high and inflation was a bit too low, and that the Federal Reserve needs to think about what it can do to lean against that situation. But I would refer you back to that speech.
And I'll just remind you that the briefing today is on the housing sector and the regional economy, so if we can keep the questions to that. Caroline.
From Bloomberg. I just wanted to follow up. You mentioned in your speech that you were looking at sort of the risks being posed by this foreclosure issue, and I was hoping you could elaborate a little bit on that. I mean, there's a lot of talk about what this is going to mean for the banks and, you know, potentially sort of systemic risk. To what extent do you think there is a systemic risk here?
Well, that's what we're trying to evaluate. I mean, as I said in my speech, we are working with the Office of Comptroller of Currency and the FDIC to do a review of what really are the facts. To get a better understanding about whether how big this problem is, how easy it is to remedy, and what the medium and long term consequences are. So I don't really have anything more to say than what I said in my formal comments.
Hugh from the Bergen Record.
Hello. Yeah. Can you elaborate a little bit more on why New Jersey has done worse than the rest of this region in this recession?
We'll have Jim take it first.
Sure. I think when you look at the employment dynamics in New Jersey, they really follow the nation more so than New York City or New York State. So it really the structure of the economy compared to, say, New York City is more like the nation. It's been subject to similar forces, national forces. And so, the dynamics here look a lot like the nation. Now, it's also the case that New Jersey's finance sector began to weaken before the nation. So really back in 2005, we started to see some weakness there. And also in the construction sector and in manufacturing, we had seen some weakness. But again, I want to emphasize that it looks a lot like the nation, both in the decline and to date in the recovery.
I'll just add one thing to that. So with respect to housing, which obviously there's connections between housing and local economic performance, as I talked about in my presentation, we know that in New Jersey the penetration of these non-prime loans was higher than it was in other parts of the district, and that could contribute to volatility in the housing sector, and that can play out into local economic performance as well.
Quick follow-up? Sure.
Yeah. In terms of that, can you explain what determines the penetration of non-prime and Alt-A loans? Why did New Jersey have it more, or why did anywhere have it more than elsewhere?
Well, I can try to do my best on that, and for some help on the panel as well. But you know, in general, what we think is that the introduction of these non-prime loans expanded the amount of credit that's available and brought people into the market. And so, as a result of that, wind up seeing higher prices. And in fact, those higher prices could feed back into having lenders more willing to actually loan at that point as well. So this sort of cycle of higher prices and lending, the self-reinforcing cycle, may have contributed to that in New Jersey as it did in other parts of the country. Maybe some of the housing experts could talk a little bit about some of the reasons why these penetrated in other places in New Jersey.
I would just add, I agree with what Jason just said. I would just add that it's very complicated. There's some ongoing research among academics to try to answer that very question. What's a little puzzling is that you can see that there are some areas of the country where there was a lot of non-prime lending, California, one example, and then other parts where there was very little. But even in those places like New York State, where there wasn't so much of a penetration of non-prime lending, there are these pockets And it's not obvious what it is that drove that in these particular areas. So it's an ongoing question that I think we'll have more insight into as more research gets done.
Are there any questions from the callers?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star then one on your touchtone phone.
Okay, we'll take another one from the room, Lynn, and come back. Aileen from the Financial Times.
In terms of the frugality behavior, you know, that you mentioned and the uncertainty around housing, to what extent does more affordable mortgages and more accommodative monetary policy, which you refer to as well, to what extent does that work less well or not? I mean, how are these linked? And are there any differences from a kind of national level versus a more regional level in this?
Well, certainly the lower level of mortgage rates makes housing more affordable, so that puts a bit of a floor under housing prices, and that works both at the national and at the regional level. One of the things that leans against that makes it maybe a little bit less effective than maybe what has been historically are two things. One, the fact that a lot of households are starting with mortgages that are worth, you know, that are higher in value than the actual price of the current price of the home, so they don't have that flexibility to take advantage of that and refinance. So you get less refinancing activity than you would typically get in this circumstance. And the second issue, of course, is that we've had some tightening of credit standards going into the end of the boom. Credit availability was very, very loose, and credit conditions were obviously, too loose, as it with the benefit of hindsight. They've been tightened quite a bit as we've gone through the recession. Some of that was appropriate, given where we were. The good news is, though, that the tightening of credit availability does seem to have ended. The Federal Reserve does a survey of senior loan officers, and most recent survey showed that no banks were tightening credit conditions at this point. And a few banks were now starting to loosen credit conditions. So the credit availability piece, while it's still quite tight relative to what it is historically, we've passed the worst point, and things are starting to improve on that front.
So does there need to be further action to tackle the negative equity piece?
Well, I think that's certainly one of the constraints that's inhibiting the lift that lower long-term rates are giving to economic activity, but that's a very, very difficult issue. I don't know, Joe, if you want to make a comment on that.
Well, it's not just that negative equity can restrict the refinancing. I mean, there are policy interventions such as the HARP program that have tried to address that. It certainly creates other hurdles for the household, in that if you want to, say, trade up to a bigger house, as say your family is growing, you're going to have to now, you basically have lost your down payment, which was the equity you put in the house. Normally that is a big part of funding the down payment on the next house. So you're going to have to save up and actually pay off the deficiency if you're going to avoid that default, plus save for a new down payment. So that's really quite a hurdle, and it's probably going to delay that trade-up time. And then in addition, it depends on what the prevailing credit conditions are. If down payment requirements are more strict, that's just going to raise the hurdle even more. So this sort of saving behavior can affect certainly these households where they've seen the value of their homes decline.
Questions from the call?
Yes, sir. We do have a question from David Robinson. Please go ahead.
Hi. Jason, you documented how the relative mild impact of the housing decline upstate helped to mute the overall impact of the recession so far. But what do you think the likely implications are going forward in terms of how the relatively stable housing market upstate will affect the strength of the recovery going forward?
Hi, David. Is this microphone on?
Yeah.
Thanks for the question. I think right now, as I was documenting in the very last part of the presentation, there's really a lot of uncertainty around what's happening in housing. And so it's really, at this point, very hard to get a sense for what we're going to see over the next several quarters and into the next year as the recovery continues to take hold. So it's very difficult sitting here now to sort of get a sense for what exactly will happen first with housing and then how that will play out into the local economy.
And what we could say is that household formation rates in upstate New York are probably going to be quite a bit lower than the national average. So the lift that you're ultimately going to get from housing nationwide as housing sort of climbs back to sort of long-term household formation rates, you probably won't get as much lift in upper New York State because the population growth isn't there to support that.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if there are questions, please press star one.
Thank you, Lynn. Charlie, WNYC.
So where do you see, for the president perhaps or anyone on the panel, where do you actually see economic growth coming from? I mean, we've had the tax credits for housing, for cash for clunkers. We've had accommodative monetary policy. We've had stability in the financial sector, if you look at here in New York City, and yet they're not hiring. So where exactly is this growth going to come from? Do we just sort of muddle along for the next couple of quarters?
You know, as I noted in the speech I gave a couple weeks ago, I think that what's going to happen is that things will just gradually get better over time, and they'll get better over time for a couple reasons. One, the cyclically sensitive sectors, including housing, are very depressed relative to sort of long-run rates of household formation. So we would certainly expect over time that housing will recover, and that will be helpful. Number two, as I noted earlier, credit availability looks like it's slowly improving as the housing sector, as the banking sector becomes a bit more healthy. I mean, there's a split there between the large banks and the smaller banks, and the large banks, are further along the way to returning to health than the smaller banks. But as in the aggregate, the banking sector is getting a little bit healthier, and so credit availability is improving. The third thing is that growth in the rest of the world is doing quite well, so especially if you look at the emerging markets. And so that should be a benefit to us going forward. So I don't expect this situation to turn around very, very quickly. I think it's more likely that it'll be a gradual process, and so we'll gradually see a bit faster growth, but over time.
What could prevent that from happening? What do you worry about looking ahead that may not cause that sort of gradual increase?
I worry about everything. It's my job.
One thing worry you more than another?
Well, you know, I think we worry about, you know, shocks to the economy that come from unanticipated sources. Certainly, you know, we have some, you know, that's why we're exploring this whole issue of the, you know, the foreclosure issue to see if that's a big problem or a much smaller problem. I think that there is a lot of uncertainty about what's going to happen next in terms of housing activity and home prices. We don't really have a full sense of what the expiration of the home buyer tax credit is going to do for activity and prices. So there's quite a bit of uncertainty. Another, of course, important issue sort of at the global level is the fiscal policy path, both here and abroad, and the tolerance of investors to tolerate fiscal paths that aren't that don't look yet sustainable over the very long term. So that's something that I certainly am worried about too. So there's plenty to worry about still.
I just want to, on New York City, since you did mention New York City, one of the interesting things that's happened is in the last few recessions, we've never had a recovery in New York City employment without first seeing a recovery in the securities industry. Yet this time, that's exactly what we're seeing. Securities industry employment is steady while all these other sectors are growing. And I think that just underscores that, you know, often in a recovery, growth comes from areas where you might not expect it, and certainly I wouldn't have expected to see New York City rebounding without a rebound in the securities industry.
Lynn, any other calls, any other questions from the callers?
No, sir, there are no additional questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Any final question from the room here in New York? Christina from Reuters.
Is this working? One of the things that you didn't address in your speech on the housing market is mortgage market reform. I was wondering how that plays into your view of the outlook for housing.
Well, you're noting a very important big issue that's coming down the road, which is what's going to follow Fannie and Freddie in terms of GSE, in terms of the government-sponsored enterprises. This is obviously something that is going to be a very, very important topic for next year. Now, obviously, the Federal Reserve is not, you know, in the vanguard of leading that effort, because that's going to be something for the administration and Congress to work out. But we obviously, you know, do have, you know, views on that subject, and so we'll, you know, to the extent that people seek our opinion, we will certainly offer it.
Okay, so this concludes our Q3 2010 Regional Economic Press Briefing. Thank you very much to everyone who called in and everyone who joined us here in Lower Manhattan. We'd like to just note that we'll be upstate next week, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday with President Dudley. We hope you'll follow us. We'll see you again in early 2011 for the next Regional Economic Press Briefing. And just a reminder, all of the materials from today's briefing will be on our website, including video and audio later on today. Thank you very much.